In the name of God, the Merciful. In the name of God, the Merciful. May peace be upon His Prophet. May peace be upon our Prophet, and may peace be upon all of the Prophets. May peace be upon the last of the Prophets, Abu al-Qasim, son of Abdullah. May peace be upon all of his family. May peace be upon all of his friends, and may peace be upon all of the Prophets. My dear brothers and sisters, to all those who are present, may peace be upon you all. God said in His holy book, in the name of God, the Merciful, do not believe that those who were killed in the cause of God as dead people, but they are alive with their God. Alive with their God. This is the destiny of the martyrs. The martyrs are happy with the destiny they have achieved, and of course they know that others will also stand on the same path and walk on the same path, and those who walk on this path of martyrdom always will witness the good destiny, the happy destiny, and will be with their God. This is what God said in His holy book. My dear brothers and sisters, and especially here I would like to speak to the families of the martyrs. I welcome you all to this day, to this occasion, this very, very important, heroic occasion. This day is the day we chose, the day we wanted to be the day of the Hezbollah martyr. And although we consider that we belong to all of the martyrs who have sacrificed with their souls, with their cleansed souls, who have sacrificed with their cleansed blood in defense of Lebanon and in defense of the Ummah or the nation, and in defense of the dignity, we consider that they belong to us, all of the martyrs who fell in defense of Lebanon. But as a part of this nation or of this Ummah, as part of the resistance of this Ummah and the jihad, the jihadist movement of this Ummah, we have our own martyrs, martyrs who belong to our organization, to our families. And if we speak about the Hezbollah martyr, this does not mean we are speaking about a separate martyr, a martyr who is unique from the other martyrs, just because he is a martyr for us, who fell fighting for us. Of course, all martyrs who defend Lebanon and defend our region ever since the beginning of the resistance, before Hezbollah was founded, of course, we have a very, very long chain there. Different generations who sacrificed, generations who refused to deter and to bow down to occupation and colonialism and hegemony. All of them, of course, are equal, all of these martyrs. But we chose this day, the 11th of November, as the day of the Hezbollah martyr, because it is the day of the first Hezbollah martyr, the prince of the martyrs, Ahmad Qasir, the first Hezbollah martyr. Of course, he is the first martyr from Hezbollah, and he sacrificed his body, his soul, his mind, his ideology, his love, for the sake of meeting with God, with Allah. And the shortest way to meet God is jihad in his cause, and killing in this cause, killing in the good way, of course. And the first martyr operation was in Tyre, the southern Lebanese city of Tyre, which led to a killing of a high number of the enemies, a high number of the enemy forces. And if any one of us wants to understand what God says about the martyrdom, you must of course focus on the operations, and you just take a look at the face of the defense minister of Israel at that time, Ariel Sharon, who went and visited that area in Tyre where the martyrdom operation took place. He was, of course, astonished. His face showed weakness. His face showed defeat, the face of Aliyah Sharon, just after that martyrdom operation. That day was a great day for us. It was the day of thanks. The day of thanks, the day where we knew that good things were coming, that victories were up to come, were coming in the future. And in the end, of course, as you know, victories were achieved. These victories were achieved because of the blood and the sacrifices of all of those people, the blood which was spilt before Ahmad Qasir and after Ahmad Qasir. This day is a day for all of our martyrs, the leaders of the organization, the leaders of the resistance organizations, of course, the very important martyr, our teacher, our leader, Sayyid Abbas al-Musawi, the former Hezbollah Secretary General, and our Sheikh, the Sheikh of the martyrs of resistance, Sheikh Raghib Harab, in addition, of course, to the great jihadist martyr, Haj Imad Mughniyi, all of the other martyrs as well, all of those martyrs who took many stances, who held many different positions in their resistance, who stood on the battlefield, who played many different roles in the resistance operations. Of course, we have a long list of those people, the great martyrs as well, who walked on the path of martyrdom and who overcame all of the obstacles and who overcame everything in order to fight for the cause of God. And all of the martyrs, the mujahideen, the fighters who fell for this cause, the fighters who fell when they were doing their duty and playing their role, the appropriate role and the duty of defending our dignity. So this day is a day for all of those martyrs whom I just mentioned, all of those martyrs who are walking on this path, all of those martyrs who are related to us and to our families ever since the beginning of the march in 1982 until today. On this day, as every year, and as we commemorate, just as we commemorate this anniversary every year, we meet to express our pride because of the jihad of these people. We express our admiration and our respect for their sacrifices. We are also stressing on this day on our commitment to their ideology, to their path, to the path they walked on. We also stress on the victories they achieved. We are meeting, and amongst us we have the families of the martyrs, and of course we do respect and we admire and appreciate the sacrifices of these families, and in their presence we would like to express our pride. And we would like to once again renew our promise to all of these families. On this day, we remember once again, we once again shed our memory and shed light in front of the eyes of all of our children and grandchildren. And we plant in their memories and in their hearts, we plant this ideology and we plant the names of these martyrs and the pictures of these martyrs, their faces. Not because they need this, but because we need this. We need to remember all of the time. Of course, the martyrs do not need this. The martyrs are alive with their God ever since they performed their martyr operations, ever since they fell as martyrs, ever since they left this planet, this world. They have been with their God. They are happy, of course, with the situation they are in. They are happy with what they achieved, the level they have reached with God, the high level with God. And they also know that others will follow them on the same path, others who have also made the same promise, the promise which many have made. They loved martyrdom. They wanted to be martyrs and to meet with God. And they also hoped and wished and called for their wish to be granted. They practiced jihad. They did their utmost. And so they were able to achieve their aim and they were victorious. But we who need to be reminded all the time, because when we look at the faces which glitter, and when we listen to their names, and when we remember the jihad of all of these people, We, of course, sense greater responsibility, and we stand up for this responsibility, and this increases our determination, and it also leads us to be more honorable to these people, to be more honorable to the promise we made. And so we never turn backwards, because in any moment of weakness or in any moment of tiredness, when we look backwards, of course, we will always see their faces and we will always remember their names and their advice. And this always reminds us of the promises we made. So we stop looking backwards and we go forward. We go forward, which is a place we must go. And of course, at this time, we are always enthusiastic. We are always very enthusiastic and look forward to achieving what the martyrs achieved. We need this because we always need to be reminded of the appropriate path we should walk on, because we always need honesty, and we always, of course, need to be reminded of the cleansed souls when we witness very difficult events, when we witness hardships. This is the only way to overcome the hardships, to resort to the martyrs and to the path of the martyrs. We always need someone to remind us and to tell us of the truth of the world, so that we can take this world lightly, and to always be reminded of the truth of the afterworld, to look forward to the afterworld, and to work to achieve what we can for the afterworld. Of course, they are the ones who have shown us the appropriate path, and so we owe it to them to continue on this path. And they were the ones who were able to make victory impossible in spite of the high number of enemies and low number of people who stood by us. Of course, they are a beacon for us. They guide us so that we can, as I said, walk on this same road without any retreat, without any weakness, even if we witness any terrorism, any obstacles, any hardships. On Martyrs' Day, and with the families of the martyrs amongst us, and in the midst of all of this talk about the sacrifices of the martyrs, we thank God. We thank God that He was able to bless our people and to bless our Ummah with these generations of men and women who are vigilant and who fight for a cause, men and women who have faith, men and women who have a will, men and women who practice jihad, men and women who are dignified, who refuse to be humiliated, who refuse to deter, who defended our people, who defended us, who defended our dignity and defended our territory and sovereignty, and hence were able to bring to us these victories. Today we are meeting in southern Beirut, in this territories which the Israeli or the Zionist occupation stood on in 1982. Of course, at that time the Zionists entered into Beirut and Mount Lebanon and the Baqa Valley. And today, after all of these years since 1982, after the sacrifices, southern Beirut is back. Beirut is back. Baqa is back. Mount Lebanon is back. South Lebanon is back. Except, of course, these small territories which are still occupied in the Kfar Shuba hills and the Shuba farms. Because of this holy blood of all of the martyrs, we have gotten back the majority of our territories. Today is the day which we confess to the fact that we owe these people, and we thank them to what they did for us, for their sacrifices from 1982 to the year 2000, to the year 2006, when they stood and crushed the aspirations and the plots of the enemy and the American Zionists. Of course, the last of which was the New Middle East Project, which was also crushed by our fighters. We tell our martyrs that we today here are living, and we are alive, and we are living as dignified people. We are living in sovereignty. We are living as an honorable people. We are living and we feel strong, and we feel that the world belongs to us, and that we can also own the afterworld because of your holy blood, because of your light and your guiding and your sacrifices. My dear brothers and sisters, after all of these sacrifices and after all of this cleansed blood was spilt, we reached this stage, which we witness today, and we are observing what is going on, all of the developments on the level of our country, Lebanon, and of course we are also witnessing what is going on in the region and in the world. The events of our country, of course, cannot be separated or isolated from the events of a region and the events of the world. Because we here are facing and addressing real issues, issues of fate, fatal issues, not issues which could be separated. So events of Lebanon are, of course, related to all the events. Now, a few months ago, and I'll begin in the general issues before I speak about the details. A few months ago, when President Obama was elected and a new American administration came into power in the United States, many people waited and many people looked forward to Obama. Many people had their money on Obama. And of course, it was said, we heard them say, wait, we are going to witness big changes, big transformations which will happen. These changes will serve the Arab people, will benefit the Arab people, the Arab world, the Arab governments, the third world, because we have a new leadership in the United States, a leadership of change, a leadership of correcting, a leadership which will try to present to us a humanitarian vision of the American brutal policies. But very quickly, what happened was that the truth was uncovered. And very quickly, all of this analysis collapsed. And all of this imaginary thinking was shown to be untrue. Now, especially in the last few weeks, it has become clear what we all expected from the Obama administration. And we also know what will happen in the upcoming years of the Obama administration. The result is that America is totally committed to Israel, is totally committed to the Israeli interests, is totally committed to the Israeli conditions and to Israeli security. Total commitment to these issues, total commitment which does not take into consideration, as he tried to show in his speech in Cairo, does not take into consideration the feelings or the dignity of the Arab world. He tried to show an opposite picture in Cairo, but this was discovered to be untrue. If you heard very well, and I want you to listen here very carefully, go back and revise the go back to the speech of Obama, which he made, the speech which he made when Ishaq Rabin, in the area where Ishaq Rabin was killed. Listen to what he said at that time and listen to the Obama commitment, the loud Obama commitment, the categorical, fundamental commitment to Israel's security. Now, if we go back to the military perspective, the U.S.-Israeli joint military maneuvers which were concluded yesterday or today, I believe. Of course, these maneuvers which continued for 3 weeks, the American troops, the American technology, the special forces, the high-ranking American commanders were in occupied Palestine participating in these joint military drills. And then the American military commanders and the Zionist commanders announced that the aim of these military drills is to prepare for rocket attacks from Iran and Syria and Lebanon and Gaza. So the Americans are coming for the first time in tens of years, and maybe it's the first time ever since the Zionist entity was established, I'm not sure, but maybe it is. It's the first time whereby they are partners on the field, partners on the military field, the U.S. and Israel, partners on the field in any confrontation between Israel and Iran, or Israel and Lebanon, or Israel and Syria, or Israel and Gaza. This is the American administration. We didn't even see this during the Bush administration, this partnership on the military field. And then we hear that some of this military technology, U.S. military technology, will stay in the Zionist entity, will stay permanently for the sake of helping Israel in any confrontation. on the military level as well. And ever since the July 2006 war until today, the American administration always gave Israel all kinds of weapons, all kinds of technology, all kinds of military assistance or logistical support. Now, on the political level, the Obama administration came and made some maneuvers and said that it will impose on the Israeli government a freeze of settlement activity temporarily as a condition to go back to negotiations. And I told you at that time that this is only a maneuver. It's not true. It's only an American trick or maneuver to buy time and to grab the sympathy of the Arabs. And then we witnessed, of course, especially in the past few weeks, how the American administration backed down. And in my point of view, these are tactics which were agreed upon from the beginning. Of course, the Americans backed down from the condition of freezing settlement activity, and the Americans called on the Palestinian negotiator to go back to the negotiating table without any preconditions and to negotiate on the negotiating table for the sake of freezing settlement activity. Negotiating for the sake of freezing settlement activity. And this led to what we heard in the past few days. This led to a lot of frustration for the Palestinian negotiating team. A lot of frustration. And today, of course, some media outlets published what was said by one of the Palestinian negotiators, who said that after 18 years, we announce that we have reached the stage whereby we conducted failed negotiations for 18 years. When I heard these comments, and it was a coincidence when I heard them, or maybe it was God wanted me to listen to these comments or read these comments. Now, it's very, very interesting, the number 18. 18 years of negotiations which led to failure, which led to frustration, which led to total loss, which led to the continuation of occupation. And on the other hand, 18 years of resistance in Lebanon from 1982 until the year 2000. The result of these 18 years of resistance was liberating Beirut and southern Beirut and Mount Lebanon and South Lebanon from the Zionist occupation with dignity and without any help from anyone in the world. These 18 years of resistance, and compare them to the 18 years of negotiations. Now, when we reevaluate the talk of those people who support the settlement, nobody today, I don't want to mention names, but nobody today, all of the Arab sides who consider themselves part of the settlement and who are depending on the settlement, putting their money on settlement, and who were very hopeful and who were dreaming to their people about the upcoming settlement, none of them today are raising their voices. None of them are speaking. All of them are silent. And we're not hearing any of this rhetoric anymore. We just hear despair. We just hear about failure. We just hear about a dead end, which we have reached, from those people who used to support the settlement. And yesterday, the Americans came. The Americans, of course, who provide the Israelis with the weaponry and the most advanced weaponry and technology. These Americans come and call on the new Lebanese government not to respect the international resolutions only, but to totally implement these resolutions, to totally implement the international resolutions. And at the same time, these Americans who call for implementing these resolutions don't do anything, don't take any steps towards the Israeli refusal of all the international resolutions. On the contrary, the Americans defend and protect Israel, while Israel is the one which is violating the international law and which is breaching the international resolutions. And the Americans are also working hard to prevent any vote in Security Council on the Goldstone Report, which actually puts Hamas and Israel on the same level. But in Lebanon, in Palestine, in the Arab world, we've reached a stage whereby we are satisfied if they say that the victim and the oppressor are equal, because they always accused the victim and spoke highly of the oppressor. Even the law which equals between the oppressor and the victim is refused by America. And America defends Israel, even in this scenario. This is part of the big picture today in our region. And the question for all of those who told us, give the Americans time, you didn't need time. Just a brief period of time was passed and it was discovered what Obama is all about. They spoke about a black person belonging to the third world. This was all a trick which was uncovered. It was uncovered actually quicker than we expected. Now, on the other hand, the Israelis are on our border, of course, and the Israelis are continuing with their maneuvers and with their drills and with their training. They are continuing to gain all of these weapons, all kinds of weapons, of course, and they are continuing their spying activity in Lebanon, the Israelis. They are continuing this in all different means, espionage networks, and in between brackets, we once again call on the Lebanese security services to once again open this issue and to continue. We've ended the elections and a government has been formed, so let's continue with these efforts to uncover these spying networks. We also have the Israeli spying by the Renaissance planes, the unmanned drones and the drones, and also the spying devices which are being planted in the villages. Of course, we saw what was discovered in Hula in southern Lebanon very recently, the spying devices which were discovered there. So they are using all these means for espionage, and the Israelis are taking advantage of every single event, small and big event, whether it be a real event or an imaginary event which Israel itself created. The Israelis are taking advantage of all of these events and incidents and magnifying them as part of their war against Lebanon and Palestine and the resistance movements and anyone who supports them in Syria and in Iran. And, of course, they are continuing their psychological warfare, the Israelis as well. They are continuing their psychological war on Lebanon and especially on Gaza. Now, we are listening to the clear threats, public threats of waging a war on Lebanon and Gaza. After the government in Lebanon was formed yesterday, the first reaction was threatening Lebanon and holding all of Lebanon responsible because Hezbollah is part of the government. But Hezbollah was part of the government before, in the past as well. Of course, we also hear about what they allege to be security or intelligence information. And then these, of course, world intelligence officers come and make contact with Lebanese officials and Lebanese journalists and give information that there is an immediate war. Of course, many outside diplomats are making calls to Lebanese officials saying that an imminent war is set to take place against Lebanon. This is a psychological war. How do we confront this war? I'll speak about that. But before, we are also witnessing escalation in more than one region, in more than one place in the Arab and Islamic world. And we are also witnessing the attempts of trying to show that these confrontations we are witnessing in our region are confessional sectarian conflicts or confrontations. And this leads to more divisions in the Ummah. Not more divisions, because we already have divisions, but it leads actually to the tearing apart of this Ummah, and it leads to protecting Israel in the end. Because what it does, it provides other priorities other than Israel. The priority, hence, does not become liberating Israel, occupied territories occupied by Israel, but the priority becomes confessional conflict. So trying to show that any confrontation is sectarian actually serves Israel. So first of all, we are called upon for more regional cooperation to solve the problems of our region. Now, what I'm going to say today, nobody has demanded me or called on me to say this, because it's not an initiative. What I'm going to say right now reflects the opinion of any Arab person, any Lebanese person, any Muslim person, any Christian person in our Arab or Islamic world, our Arab and Islamic world, which is always being targeted. Now, we cannot depend on America to solve our problems because America is creating our problems. And we cannot depend on America to address our conflicts because America is bringing about these conflicts and financing these conflicts and feeding these conflicts. So our leaders, our rulers, the rulers of this ummah, the rulers of our region must do their utmost, must make their efforts to solve their own conflicts and address their conflicts. And so we call for more regional collaboration, more regional cooperation. We view positively, for example, the Turkish role, the new Turkish role in the region. Now, some people might play games in the Turkish issue in a sectarian way because every time, everything in our region is spoken about from the sectarian perspective. Some say that the Sunni Turks want to play a role in the region to block the road on the Iranian Shiites. We support the Sunni Turks if the Sunni Turks want to defend Palestine and Gaza and the Aqsa Mosque before we are with the Shiite Iran. And even more than this, we are with the communist Venezuela, which stands side by side with Palestine and Lebanon. We view positively the Turkish role, this Turkish role which is now focusing its eyes on the region and which is establishing strategic ties, excellent strategic ties with Syria and with Iran and with Iraq, and which is also opening up to the rest of the countries in the Arab and Islamic world. And we view very positively the Syrian-Saudi summit, which was held recently in Damascus. Many people believe that the opposition in Lebanon would be disappointed with such a summit. But no, we were very happy. I don't know how others felt, but we in the Lebanese opposition, we were happy with this Saudi-Syrian summit. And the first blessing of this summit was here in Lebanon, the Lebanese government. Any collaboration amongst the Arabs. For example, a few days ago we saw the developments in the Iranian-Qatari ties, and this is something which must all make us happy, must all make us joyful. When we see our Arab and Islamic countries being closer together, when we see our Arab and Islamic countries addressing their problems together and strengthening their ties and going towards more cooperation, more completeness, this is what leads to strength. Strength which protects our region and which protects our world, protects us from more divisions, from more humiliation. So, in this context and within this perspective, and while we are speaking about this, we call for better ties between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Let's see an Iranian initiative towards Saudi Arabia or a Saudi initiative towards Iran or an initiative from any Arab or Islamic world to lead to more cooperation and collaboration between these two very important countries in the Islamic world. Let's see more cooperation to, of course, to take away the fire, to take away the flame. Some people are trying to say the conflict in Yemen is a confessional sectarian problem. Is Ali Abdullah Saleh not a Zaydi? Is he someone who is not from the same confession of the Houthis? Are some Yemeni military officers from a sect or a confession which is different from the Houthis? Some people are trying to label the Yemeni conflict as a confessional sectarian conflict. Some are also making fatwas in this cause. We in the Arab and Islamic world, we need a fireman, an honest fireman who will work day and night to put out this fire. We must put out this fire in northern Yemen. All of us must do our best to stop the fighting in northern Yemen. And because some people are trying to show this conflict as a sectarian, confessional conflict, which is very dangerous. After, of course, this is happening after, and I believe in the end, it will totally end the confessional war in Iraq. So after We made progress in Iraq towards addressing this issue of confessional problems. We're witnessing attempts to make a confessional war in Yemen. So we must address this problem. And I tell all of the Ummah of the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, your Prophet tells you that correcting ourselves is even better than years of fasting and prayer. What does it mean when we fast and we pray at the time where we witness conflicts and fires and bloodshed and killing of civilians, killing of women and children in our region? This is on one hand. On the other hand, we call, in light of the developments in the issue of the so-called peace process, we call on the government and on the people of a region to reconsider their alternatives, to reconsider their alternatives. And on Martyrs Day, on the day of the cleansed martyrs, the mujahideen, those who sacrificed, on this day we call for adopting the alternative of resistance on the Islamic national level. We call for adopting this approach. We call for adopting resistance and for defending the alternative of resistance, and we also call for providing support for the resistance movements, especially in Lebanon and in Palestine, especially in the confrontation against the Zionist enemy. And here is my duty as well to highlight an important point. I would like to express my admiration and my appreciation to what the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said in the latest OIC Economic Summit in Turkey when he spoke about the resistance as the only alternative after the settlement alternative has been proven to be a failure. And Bashar al-Assad said that our support for the resistance is a duty which we are doing. And he also said that we are proud when we support the resistance because we are doing our duty. And we in the resistance, we respond to this rhetoric by calling, first of all, for generalizing this concept on the Islamic and Arab world, and second of all, we call for an expression of appreciation for Bashar al-Assad and for the stance taken by Syria, the leadership and the people, the stance taken by Syria in support of the resistance in Palestine and in Lebanon. And I tell the whole world that we in the resistance in Lebanon, we were always proud of all of those people who stood side by side with us and who provided us with support, whatever kind of support it may be. And so we were never ashamed of this alliance. We were never ashamed with our friendship with Syria, nor were we ashamed with our friendship with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And we are not ashamed of our friendship with any country or with any government or any political party which stands side by side and which stands in support of the rights of our people and the rights of our resistance in this conflict. And we are also proud to have people who support us, people who express their pride in their support for resistance movements. My dear brothers and sisters, within this perspective which I was just speaking about, we also have a responsibility in Lebanon. And I will speak shortly about the new Lebanese government, but before that, I would like to speak about the Israeli threats. 2 days ago, the Israeli Joint Chief of Staff, Gabi Ashkenazi, and by the way, Gabi Ashkenazi was the Israeli military commander of the Northern Territories when the Lebanese resistance defeated the Israeli army, the Israeli occupying army in the year 2000. I believe he was the Northern military commander at that time, or maybe before that, but he did hold this post. And so he knows the taste of defeat and confrontation. So they took away Dan Halutz. They did not bring Gabi Ashkenazi. They did not bring a general who had achieved Israeli victories. They brought a general who had witnessed Israeli defeats. They, of course, brought back a general who had witnessed victories achieved by the Lebanese resistance. So Ashkenazi made a report, and there's no need for me to deny nor to say that what he said is true. He spoke about tens of thousands of rockets who have a range of 300 kilometers, 325 kilometers. And as you know, we don't deny, nor do we say that such claims are correct. If this is true, yes, that's good. We're not sad if we have tens of thousands of rockets. If it's not true, okay, he's waging a psychological war on himself and on his army and on his people without any efforts being made from us. But he wanted to go in another direction. The Israelis in this period are trying to speak about a war, and they are also trying to speak about issues. For example, when they spoke about developing some rockets in Gaza, and our brothers in Gaza also didn't deny these claims, nor did they say that these claims were right and true. As if the Israelis are trying to create an atmosphere that because of the rockets and because of the weaponry and because of more a stockpile of weapons, as if the Israelis are trying to tell us, to tell the Lebanese and to the Palestinians and the people of the region, that we might witness a war. Now, there are two phases to this topic. The first is that, yes, Ashkenazi is looking for an excuse to wage a war, and he wants to just provide such an excuse. That is a possibility. It is a possibility that it might be an excuse for a war. But there's another face to this coin, that this talk, this rhetoric means he doesn't want to go to war at all, that Israel doesn't want to go to war at all. How? I'll answer. This Israeli Joint Chief of Staff might be telling his people, or some extremists, of course all Israelis are extremists, but some more than others, and some in the Zionist entity are saying that we cannot be more patient towards Lebanon and to Gaza, and we must take certain steps, we must strike, we must take advantage of the time, because the resistance movements are increasing in strength. As if Ashkenazi is saying, if anyone wants to go to wage a new war, it's not going to be like the year 2000 or the year 2006. These people now have tens of thousands of rockets with a range of 300 kilometers, 325 kilometers, as if he's saying there is no place in occupied Palestine, no city, even the furthest cities will be within striking distance of the resistance. This is what Ashkenazi might be saying. This means that he's saying if a new war is waged, not only the inhabitants of Haifa will be forced to flee, not only the inhabitants of Netanya, not only the inhabitants of Tel Aviv, no. And he even mentioned the name Dimona in the furthest part, as if he's saying that all of the Israelis in all cities will be forced to flee, and hence he might be calling on those Israelis who are calling for war, he might be telling them, calm down. This might be the message he's trying to convey. He might be trying to say Israel has no choice. If Israel is patient and doesn't take any steps, the resistance movements will increase in strength, and this international pressure, the voices we hear from here and there, this doesn't do anything, doesn't accomplish anything. All of this furor, this only leads to sore throats of those who are speaking and doesn't affect us at all. Those who believe that international pressure or regional pressure will affect us, they are illusioned. These are illusions. So they must put up with this. On the other hand, if they want to hurry up to a war, Ashkenazi is saying, look what this resistance possesses. So What they say about waging a war on Lebanon, yes, it is a possibility that a war might be waged. But on the other hand, this rhetoric might also mean that a war cannot be waged. So anyway, we are confronting an Israeli psychological war. And I believe, just as we said on the 14th of August, we wanted to take away the threat of war from Lebanon. We do not want a war, of course. And this is not the strategy of the resistance, and I've spoken about this in detail. I spoke about it in detail on Al-Quds Day. I don't want to repeat it because I want to refer to the government issue, Lebanese government. So if we want to take away the threat of war from Lebanon, we must make the Israelis understand, when I say we, I mean all the Lebanese, we must make the Israelis understand that their psychological war will not achieve anything, and that these threats are empty threats, and that any new war on Lebanon will not lead to any divisions in Lebanon, nor will it lead to any internal conflicts in Lebanon. On the contrary, any new Israeli war will lead to a Lebanese unified stance. I'd like to tell you, Israelis understand, and one way to prevent a war on Lebanon is to make the Israelis understand that if a new war is waged on Lebanon, all of us will be together in defending our country and defending our territory and defending our sovereignty and our people and our dignity. This is something very important, a very important factor, an essential factor, a decisive factor, in addition to the factor of strength. As long as Ashkenazi is speaking in this way, I've spoken a lot, time and again, and I would like to repeat, yes, if, as I said, we do not want a war, of course, as God said, you might be forced to fight, and you don't like fighting. Of course, a human being in his nature doesn't like wars. But if they wanted to try, I said before, and I repeat once again, God willing, with our resistance, with our unity, with our cooperation, with our firm stance, with the blessings of the blood of our martyrs, these threats will be transformed into a chance, an opportunity for us. And I'd like to tell all of those people, and I'd like to complete what I said before. I'd like to complete what I said before. Of course, what the Israelis are saying is that any new war, during any new war, the Israeli Air Force power cannot end the fighting, will not decide the result of the war. Because of what they witnessed in the July 2006 war, Air Force power during the July 2006 war only led to destroying houses and killing women and children, and the rockets continued to reach Haifa and even further than Haifa. Now, next time, it will not be Haifa. The rockets might reach after Haifa, meaning very much further than the city of Haifa. The Israeli Air Force, the Israeli military Air Force, cannot decide the war, cannot end the war. And so the only alternative is a land invasion by infantry divisions. And so the Israelis, of course, threatened us with 5 military contingencies, more or less. And then we said, yes, these Israeli threats will be transformed into an opportunity for us. Meaning, when these Israeli military contingencies enter Lebanon, if they do, what do they mean when they say 7 military contingencies? It means half or even more of Israeli military. Now, if these military contingencies enter into our geography, into our territory, and here I must explain in detail, because before some people said, you must of course make people understand this. When the Israelis enter our geography or enter our territory, this geography, the geography of Lebanon, southern Lebanon, this geography, God, of course, when He created this territory, He created it for the sake of humiliating and destroying the occupants. So let's explain this. Now, when the According to the Israeli plan, when these military contingencies enter, and as I said, about half of the Israeli, they represent about half of the Israeli military, when they enter our geography and our demography, when they enter our valleys and our villages and our mountains, we will all be there, ready. The most important, or one of the most important lessons of 2006, nobody ran away from the battlefield. Nobody dropped their weapons and ran away from the Lebanese side. Our problem in 2006 was how to prevent all of our fighters from going to the battlefield. That was our problem. In the Battle of Bint Jbeil in southern Lebanon, the Israeli reports say that we did not isolate Bint Jbeil, we did not lay a siege to Bint Jbeil, we surrounded Bint Jbeil and left one exit so that the Israeli fighters, or the fighters would run away from Bint Jbeil. But what surprised us was that this exit became an entrance for more fighters to join with the resistance. This is what happened in July 2006. So we will all be there, standing ready to fight in the valleys, in the mountains, in the villages and cities. We will be there. And we will destroy their tanks. We will destroy their military machines, and we will also capture their soldiers and kill their soldiers. It's not important if you kill all the military contingency. It's enough to kill some of the soldiers of the contingency to make the contingency collapse. Destroying a contingency, a military contingency, from a military perspective does not mean destroying all the tanks of this contingency. It's enough to destroy part of the contingency to defeat it and make it collapse. Yes, so we can transform these Israeli threats into an opportunity. And we are able to destroy these contingencies and these tanks and to kill these Israeli military officers and these soldiers. Now, in July 2006, some say that they did not resort to a ground invasion, but they did, yes. 40,000 military officers, 40,000 soldiers, the 200 Israeli tanks which were destroyed, were they in the sea or in the air? No, they were of course on the ground. 40,000 Israeli soldiers took part in a ground invasion against Lebanon in the July 2006 war, and they failed. At that time, we were not as strong as we are today. And today, and once again, we would like to remember the martyr Imad Mughni, may peace be upon his soul. Today, after these years passed, of course, we are stronger, we have more fighters, a high number of fighters. Our training has enhanced, we've evaluated the war, we've evaluated our weak points, our strong points, we've addressed many of our weaknesses, we've also enhanced and developed our strengths, and this is our natural right. And so I say we are ready. And I promise and I pledge once again on this day, the day of the martyrs, the day where the souls of martyrs are alive, I told Barak and Ashkenazi and Netanyahu and Obama, I'd like to tell the whole world, send as much military contingencies as you want, 5, 7, send all of the Israeli army if you want. We will destroy this army and crush this army in our valleys and in our villages. This is the change, the transformation which I am speaking about in the region. If a war takes place, we shall witness such a transformation if a war does take place. Now let me speak about the Lebanese internal situation and the new Lebanese government. Of course, thank God, after a long wait, finally the Lebanese government was formed. Now, some can speak about this stage of forming a government. I don't want to speak about this stage because we've overcome this issue. If I do speak about it, it means I'll go back to Lebanese internal divisions. I don't want to. A government has been formed. I just have one simple comment. You might interpret it as a joke. Of course, I've made some threats. Let's just calm the atmosphere down now. Previously, In the last 4 or 5 months, I call on the Lebanese to go back to the newspapers and to look once again at the analysis of the political factions concerning the disruption, the efforts of blocking the formation of a government. Now this government has been formed, and so the truth must be uncovered. If you go back to what happened during the past 4 or 5 months, a lot of analysis on the television stations and all of what was said by the political leaders, by political analysts, was very much out of this world. What made me laugh most of all concerning the formation of the cabinet was how the way they tried to relate the government formation in Lebanon with the Iranian nuclear issue. This is really laughable, especially when some speak angrily and in the end they say Hezbollah. Of course, we were the ones who were subjected to most of these accusations. They said Hezbollah was blocking government formation because Iran wanted something from America in the nuclear dossier, and so they tied Lebanese cabinet formation with the discussions of Vienna and the IAEA and Al-Baradi. Now, Lebanon, look how important Lebanon is. Look how important the Lebanese government is. It is important, yes. But how can you compare the Lebanese cabinet to the Iranian nuclear dossier? This is silly. And so I'd like to call on these people. And actually, there are two versions. They speak about the Iranian nuclear dossier or the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights haven't been retrieved, nor has the Iranian nuclear dossier been solved. But the cabinet has been formed, not just been formed, and even the portfolios which Hezbollah gained, some might say these portfolios which Hezbollah gained are very, very unimportant portfolios. Of course, we answer them and say that from the very beginning, all we wanted was that the government be formed, irrespective of what we want, what portfolios we want. What we wanted was the opposition to play a role and for the government to be an efficient government, because we believe this served the country. This is all I want to say. And please, these analysts and these political philosophers who we don't see anywhere else in the world except in Lebanon, let them stand, keep their feet on the ground, and speak in a logical way when they want to refer to any political situation in the country. Now, concerning the government, thank God the government has been formed. What we call on today is that this government be a government of national partnership, a government of national cohesion, national agreement. Yes, as was said before, I would like to agree with those who said that we don't want this government to be a government of divisions, a government to make stances against one another. And actually, I would like to tell you that one of the most important reasons behind the delay of the cabinet formation was the rhetoric and the stances taken against one another in Lebanon. Anyway, let the Lebanese government be a government of joint efforts, a government of collaboration, of coordination, a government in agreement. I would like to announce that the success of this government with its prime minister, with its ministers, in its current formation, the success of this government serves us, serves Lebanon, serves the people of Lebanon. And I'd like to say, because we spoke about the martyrs and the families of the martyrs, the success of this government also serves the interests of Hezbollah and the resistance in Lebanon. We must act according to this analysis. Success of the government serves all of us. Of course, we'll do our best to make this government successful, make this experiment successful. Concerning the cabinet policy statement or cabinet manifesto, we do expect that there will be no problems concerning this cabinet, and I will leave this issue to the government members and those who are responsible. There are certain priorities which we must address. One of the most important priorities is the social, economic, financial situation in Lebanon. This social, economic situation is very difficult. We are amongst the people. We are one of the people, and we are feeling with the people. We are feeling the sufferings of the people. So we need efforts to address this, and we must also address the corruption, administrational corruption. I will be very frank as well. There are very, very important issues which we are witnessing in Lebanon. I call not to take these issues and put them aside. Any political party in Lebanon can raise any issue. So no issue should be left aside. But I call for hesitation. Be hesitant in raising important issues. Let's be patient. Let's take a breath. Let's be calm. Let's not go from one crisis to another. Of course, why am I saying be hesitant? Because if we begin with these big issues now, it means we're going to witness problems and internal divisions. Let the country take a breath of fresh air. Now, of course, we are approaching national dialogue sessions. We can raise any topics, although the national defense strategy is the only issue on the table. If anyone wants to add any other issue, we don't have any problem. But let's discuss calmly any topic. But let this government do its work. And let's not put a lot of weight on this government from the beginning and to raise big issues from the very beginning. And I call on the Lebanese Prime Minister and the ministers, especially in the cabinet policy statement, let's not put high aims which we cannot achieve. Let's put realistic aims which we can achieve in the short term, because this gives trust in the government and this creates trust between different sides, and then we won't witness failures whereby we will accuse each other for these failures, and we won't witness people trying to run away from responsibility. When we specify realistic goals and when we work on these goals together and when we present these goals as achievements, God will be satisfied with this, and we will satisfy our conscience, and the people will be satisfied with this government, and then we can make bigger achievements. So I call on all of us to stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder, and to do their best. And we as Hezbollah, we are serious and we are honest, and we sincerely want to make this experience successful. There are many issues which the cabinet policy statement can refer to. I don't have a lot of time, so I won't speak of this. Of course, there is one other issue. There is no doubt that the government will have to address this issue. Let's put aside the issue of weapons, but the issue is how the Lebanese government will confront the Israeli threats, the Israeli violations, and the continued Israeli occupation of some of our territories in the Shuba Farms and the Kfar Shuba Hills. In addition, the Lebanese youngsters who, in spite of all of the prisoner exchange deals, some of the Lebanese people are still, or maybe still, in Israeli prisons, such as Khalil Alayan. His family are presenting documents from the International Red Cross, which prove that Khalil is still alive, has been alive for a long time. And this means that all of the information provided by Israel is misleading. And I said before, we cannot depend on any information provided by Israel. So this issue is also an issue which must be addressed by the Lebanese government. And there must be some level of national unity, some level of national efforts by the government, irrespective of the big choices which we could make on the national dialogue table. There is one more point. Now, in light of our social atmosphere, and some might be surprised, we have Martyrs Day, and on this day I'm speaking about America and Israel, and I'm going to speak now about an unimportant issue, but it is not an unimportant issue. It's an important social and security issue at the same time. My dear brothers and sisters, these martyrs, where did they come from? They came from a culture of faith, a culture of ethics. The name is Abdullah Khalil Alayyan. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. Not Khalil Alayyan, it's Abdullah Khalil Alayyan. But anyway, we must get used to this name, because the information provided by his family, as I said, is very, very sincere information which cannot be overlooked. These martyrs came from our environment, from the Lebanese national environment, an environment of faith, an environment of ethics, sympathy, traditions, Now some people want to destroy this atmosphere, this environment. Some want to destroy this environment, our cultural environment. And I am obliged to speak about this on television because I met with many political leaders in more than one place. And this issue does not only concern Beirut or southern Beirut, it concerns Mount Lebanon, northern Lebanon, the Bekaa Valley, southern Lebanon. And this threat goes and it actually penetrates the borders of the Lebanese areas. It's in all of Lebanon. What I'm speaking of is the issue of drugs. The drug pills, actually. This is something new. Previously, of course, some people used to, for example, smoke hashish or used to use some drugs, and this was uncovered very quickly in a family or in a school. Unfortunately, today, we have drug pills, and these pills have entered high schools now. I'm not overreacting. This is really what is happening. These pills are even being used in universities. They take one pill, then the next pill, then they become addicted. Some are selling these pills in the universities and in the schools, and some are also drinking these pills, and they know these pills are drugs. And some do not know. Of course, they approach a young man or young woman, give him one pill, two, three, and say these are strepsils, for example, then the person's body or blood requires these pills, and hence this person becomes addicted. Many families came and made complaints. Of course, they are losing their women and children, their sons and daughters. Drugs is even more dangerous than theft, and it's more dangerous than illegitimate sexual relations. And drugs is more dangerous than many issues. Why? Because someone can steal and make theft, but not do something else. But someone who takes drugs becomes addicted and totally collapses. And hence, there will be no longer any ethics. His mother and father no longer mean to him anything. The dignity of his family no longer means anything. He can kill, he can make illegitimate sexual relations, he becomes a spy, he steals, he does anything. The Prophet, may peace be upon him, when he speaks about the door which leads to total evil, is lying. I want to use the same way. I say taking drugs is the door to all of these sins which I just mentioned. Now, I would like to speak about the background of this, the issue of drugs. Some people are selling these pills for financial economic reasons because this is a trade which makes us gain financially and they need money. In between brackets, the excuse that people don't have work and they are hungry, this is a false excuse because when we speak about those who are in the drug trade, they are very rich, they are not hungry. They are criminals, they are killers. Now others, of course, are involved in this for economic, social reasons to just gather more and more, to increase their wealth. And some are involved from a security perspective, for security. And I'd like to tell you, Israel is trying to increase the use of drugs in our country, in our environment, in our society, in our families. And Israel, on the other hand, is accusing us, Israel is accusing us that we are increasing the use of drugs in the Israeli community. And this is an occasion for me to respond to this. Let everyone hear me. And last week, I called on one of our high-ranking religious scholars. I told him, you have time, you're an expert. Please knock the doors of all of the religious scholars and ask them about this issue from the Islamic perspective. All of our religious scholars say it is forbidden to sell drugs to anyone, and some of them even considers that selling the drugs or drug sellers are people who create chaos in the world. And I went and I even asked about the issue of using drugs in the community of the enemy. I know this is forbidden, and we said that we cannot use this in our battle with Israel, but just to make sure, because I wanted to refer to this issue today, I'd like to tell you, even selling drugs and increasing the use of drugs in the environment of the enemy is forbidden, according to our religious scholars. The Prophet, of course, may peace be upon him, they once asked the Prophet, they asked him, there are many fighters, women and children, and we don't know how to continue this battle, and there is water, they are drinking from this water, the fighters. Will you allow us, Prophet, to poison this water, to poison the water of our enemies, so that the enemy surrenders? The Prophet said they cannot do such a thing. Of course, Imam Khamenei, when he speaks about Sharia, Islamic law, when it comes to weapons of mass destruction and nuclear weapons, he's not speaking politically, he's speaking about Islamic fuqh, he's speaking about religious teachings from the period of the Prophet Muhammad. May peace be upon his soul. What does it mean when we put poison in water where women and children drink, where sick people drink, and also fighters from the enemy drink? What does this mean, poison? It means total destruction. So I'd like to say, all of the accusations made to Hezbollah that Hezbollah is increasing the use of drugs in occupied Palestine amongst Israelis, all of these accusations are empty accusations, but deliberate accusations to tarnish the image of Hezbollah and to also tarnish my image personally, because, of course, they don't observe some issues in Lebanon. During the campaign on the use of drugs in the Zionist entity, they made advertisements against drugs, and in this advertisement they had my picture. What did they write on this picture? They said, this man wants to spread poison in your houses, in your families. This is incorrect, because the Israelis are incapable of stopping the use of drugs by some of the Israeli commanders on the northern border. Some of the Israeli commanders who are taking drugs from some Lebanese drug traders, they are trying to accuse us. But I'd like to say, according to our stance, our religious stance, it is forbidden to sell and to increase the use of drugs, even in the community of the enemy. Can I be more clear than that? Of course, the Israelis target me in everything. In drugs, they put my picture. Today, according to the As-Safiya newspaper, they said that Nasrallah occupies the sea. I found this very strange. Did the Hezbollah fighters do anything behind my back? Of course they do not, but I question myself. The Israeli Ma'arif newspaper, according to Al-Safir, said that one fish in the sea is a poisonous fish, and it's a unique fish, and so the Israelis had to name it Nasrallah, referring to me. And after mentioning this, the Israeli newspaper continued and said that this fish looks very nice and looks very innocent, but one bite, one sting from this fish makes someone paralyzed for 2 weeks or even leads to his death. Can you believe it? Of course, they are saying it's very nice looking, very innocent looking. Thank you very much. It seems they consider me to be nice looking and innocent looking. And if you believe that it stings, I'm ready to sting. I'm ready to sting the enemy who occupied my territory and who took away all of our lands. But what did the Israelis say? They named the fish Nasrallah. Now I have a name in the sea. But anyway, concerning drugs, they want to name us. In fish or poisonous fish, they want to name us. Okay. Of course, never mind, because God willing, this generation, the generation of you and I, the sanctities will go back to their rightful owners, and Palestine will be back. Palestine will be returned to its rightful owners. Now, I'll go back to the drugs. This issue must be addressed. Whoever takes drugs is a victim. The criminal is he who sells the drugs, he who promotes the usage of drugs. the drug trader. He is a very big criminal. And this criminal must know that he is opening the road of evil and danger to Lebanon and to our community. There are families who were totally destroyed because of this issue. I don't want to speak a lot about its dangers. I want to speak about responsibility. We are all concerned. First of all, the government and the state. Of course, many of our religious scholars ask the question, say this government is a non-Islamic government. They have certain reservations. And they ask the question, the religious scholars I'm referring to, they ask the question, if we want to cooperate with this government for the sake of preventing drug sale and to confront this problem, is this possible? The religious scholar says, it is not only possible, it is necessary to cooperate with the Lebanese government to face this problem. And I'll tell you, according to the fatwa, we must all cooperate with the government, with the state, with the security services, and with the Lebanese judiciary, whatever this judiciary be, whatever our reservations be to this government or this judiciary, in order to confront this problem, this crisis. We must all cooperate. Of course, the Lebanese security services must take complete responsibility. The drug trader who is uncovered, or anyone who provides information about a drug trader, and any drug trader who is arrested, the security services must at times coordinate or practice a certain investigation with this drug trader, and even make him a volunteer to join with them in their efforts to confront the problem. We, religious scholars, government, of course, these drugs enter into all of your houses, all of the schools, universities, all of religious confessions. And this is more dangerous than other issues which we are preoccupied with. For no reason. The religious scholars, the university professors, school principals, mothers, fathers, all of the even tribe members, all of the families. Very frankly, my dear brothers and sisters, I would like to speak to all of the Lebanese for the sake of their women and children, for the sake of their sons and daughters, for the sake of their security and future. I call on them in the name of the blood of our martyrs. I would like all of us to announce a war, a cultural, media, social, security, judicial war against drug trade and against those who promote drug trade and against those who sell drugs without, of course, without accusing any specific confession, without accusing any specific Lebanese territory or any specific Lebanese tribe. Because in this way, we preserve Lebanon, we preserve our families, we preserve our environment and our future. My dear brothers and sisters, on this day, Martyrs' Day, we once again renew our pledge to all of the martyrs who defended Lebanon, of course, who defended Lebanon so that Lebanon would stay a unified country, a country of sovereignty, an independent country, a country which would stay a part of the great nation, the great Ummah, so that Lebanon would stay a country of love and stability, a beacon of education, and also a beacon of economic progress. For all of this, we must work to achieve this Lebanon which many martyrs sacrificed for. These martyrs sacrificed so that we could preserve Lebanon. You and I, we are called upon to take this duty, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.